This is the McCann Dogs Agility Podcast. I'm Kale McCann.
And I'm Jamie Morrow. We are professional dog trainers, members of Agility Team Canada, and together, we've been teaching dog agility for nearly 20 years.
Some nights after teaching classes, we'll spend hours talking about training, about our goals, and also some of the challenges we're facing and what we're going to do to conquer them.
And that's exactly what we're going to do in this podcast. Whether you're new to agility or competing at a world-class level, we're excited to have you listen in on our conversation.
So let's head to the line.
Hello again.
Welcome back.
Yes. Welcome back to episode 2. I think we survived the first one that we thought we'd try it again. We had a lot of fun the last time. So if you haven't listened to the first episode, make sure you check that out. But today we're doing a 180. We are going a completely different direction. Last episode, we talked about building drive, motivation, confidence in dogs. And today we are going to be talking about how to deal with high drive dogs, how to deal with dogs that are maybe a little over the top, maybe high arousal in some situations, and we're going to
stimulated.
Very stimulated. We're going to talk about a bunch of things that we have learned through our own experience, because we have had dogs, like we mentioned last episode, with dogs we had to kind of build up a little bit, but we also have had many dogs that we've had to
put the lid on,
calm down a little bit in order to get to some stuff. So if you have a high drive dog, I think you're going to find today's episode really informative. So let's just jump right into it. We were better at setting up our podcast equipment today. In fact, Jamie had a little win. I'm actually the more techie person in this moment.
I just let her
figure something out. And she was like, aren't you supposed to press that button? And I did. And then everything started working.
Saved the day.
And I was like, you suck. Okay. So first things first, you have a high drive dog. You want to do agility. You get this border collie. You get this Malinois. You get this whatever. You get this dog that's like super high and you think, okay, I should do agility with this dog. People show up to agility class and it's a shit
wild
show.
That was wild.
That's a nicer way of saying it. So when you have a dog that's really drivey and high and ready to work and could be easily influenced by, you know, a class environment or noises in the like teeter totter banging, all that kind of stuff. One thing that's super helpful to like always be able to fall back on is just good basic obedience skills. And if
verbal control.
Continue listening to this podcast, you are going to find that we somehow circle our way back to the whole topic of obedience, because, and I'm not talking like formal obedience here. We're talking like just basic, like have a brain, listen to me, choose me over other things, learn how to function types of things, which isn't always the easiest task. Am I right?
Exactly.
Yeah. Jamie has a young puppy right now. Actually, we can use him as a bit of an example. He's 7 months.
7 months.
And you've been doing some obedience stuff with you.
A lot.
And what else has been happening?
He's a wild man anytime I enter the arena. Very high. Mm-hmm. And squealing and glazed over.
Yeah, glazed over. She means his eyes. Mm-hmm. His body doesn't glaze over.
No, his eyes.
Yeah, and she's been doing a lot of obedience work with him, and he's been doing quite well in his obedience classes. But what she's learned is going from obedience class where all things are controlled to going to arena where there's 4 or 5 people working.
And he needs to have more emotional control.
Yeah.
He has a hard time managing that.
Yeah. So doing some obedience and verbal control first is going to be really important. And then knowing when you're ready to move then to agility is also really important, because I sometimes think people have this like extravagant idea about doing agility because it's super fun. We all want to get there. Like that's the point. That's the goal.
But that is the focus sometimes more so than the obedience piece, but they fall hand in hand.
Yeah. And I think the biggest detriment in those scenarios is sometimes if dogs learn that they can go in, like what we've been talking about with Smooch right now, that's Jamie's puppy, if he learns to go into the arena and self-reward and get that self-high off of being able to
watch
bark
the other
or,
dogs spin,
you know, squeal, all of those things that like, you know, is exciting for him, he, you know, we don't want him to learn that that's how he should be. So, you know,
we're never going to trial.
Never, ever. No, of course not. So actually we did a little bit of stuff this morning with him, which I think was good. I did some like sort of more chill type training with Beeline, and I didn't like you know, cheer as loud. And I just kind of toned things down a little bit. And he did awesome this morning. Yeah. He made a few mistakes, but we were able to kind of work through it and actually work at a threshold where he could get some success, because it's important to be able to replicate that. But I think sometimes if people don't have that opportunity to train through, it can be really, really difficult to conquer. So, you know, good basic obedience skills are really important first. Like, can your dog sit at your side on a loose leash when there's something going on in front of them without constantly getting up, without turning and grabbing the leash or grabbing the toy and getting really excited? Or
what's their trigger?
Yeah, exactly.
Is it other dogs? Is it the excitement of other people? Motion?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, knowing that about your dog can make all of the difference. And then also, too, like, we work a ton on, like, response to name or even a subtle command.
Go and lie down.
Go and lie down. Absolutely. Go on your bed. Like, give them jobs that they can do that puts you in the driver's seat without having to have a big battle with them. That's going to be really important. So, you know, if you have a dog that, you know, you can tell has some, you know, high drive and a lot of energy, don't be in a big rush to get them into, you know, an agility class unless you're going to go. I'm not saying that you shouldn't take an agility class or do that. I'm saying you shouldn't do it if it's not the right thing for your dog yet. And you should probably know within the first 10 minutes of being there whether it's a good idea or whether it's not based
abort mission.
Well, based on your dog's behavior. I've had lots of dogs that could function in, you know, more stimulating clashes quite early in their life because they've just had a better emotional control. I've had other dogs that, like, I had to just wait longer before I could do that. Also, using beeline, I have my four-year-old border collie who I do all my competing with. For whatever reason, most of her training, because I am the coach here and the trainer, I didn't take any classes with her because I was teaching them all. So I would train her by myself or with, like, a couple other persons. She was like a rock star. She was so good. Finally, I got her up to a level where I could take Jamie's master handling class on Wednesday nights. And, like, the first couple sessions, remember?
She's wild.
I wanted to, like, rip my hair out. She wasn't not listening, but she would, like,
stim and very focused on the other dogs,
wanting to watch the other dog. She'd sit on the start line. Yep.
Yeah,
and then I would have trouble. She wouldn't get her dog walk contact, or she'd miss weave entries, or she wouldn't collect. Not because she didn't know how to do those things, but she was in such a state of arousal and highness that she...
And it was rewarding.
Oh, my God.
It was so rewarding to watch.
She thought that hour was, like, the best thing that ever happened to her, and I wanted to kill
Kale
her.
Kale did not.
Oh, my God. I was like, my perfect little freckled dog is, like, literally, I wanted to sell her to the first person I saw.
But still has those moments sometimes.
She does.
But sometimes we like to challenge Kale and put her at the start of class where she has to go first where the dog's the highest.
I know, absolutely. But I think what always saves me, though, like, I'm complaining and saying it's so irritating.
It's the obedience.
Yeah, she has excellent verbal control. Never once did she leave me to chase another dog. Never once was she doing anything that was super inappropriate. But my level of expectation that I expect from my dogs is very, very high. I want her to be able to listen in all those scenarios. So I had to dial it back. There's lots of times where, like, when it was my turn, I would, like, make her do just the dog walk, or I'd make her do just the collection, remember? Or I'd make her sit on the start line and go back and reward her. I wouldn't even release her. Like,
stationary things.
I was like, this is how it's going to go. And then every session, she just got better and better and better. So that obedience is so, so important. I think also you mentioned this before about, like, knowing your dog's triggers and knowing, like, the right choices to make for the dog. So let's, like, shift gears to, like, I know not a ton of people right now because of, the pandemic. are trialing, but, you know, going from, like, class, dogs can function in class, and then you start going to trials, and then sometimes, like, the beast is released at trials, and you think, like, oh my God, where did this dog come from?
Dogs are naturally higher in a trial setting. Mm-hmm. They get used to their home ground, and they can function a little bit easier, mm-hmm. but when you put them in a trial setting, lots of things change. The handler changes emotionally.
Yep.
You know, you get a little bit nervous. The dog can sense that. And a high drive dog doesn't necessarily care about that. And they get higher in those moments.
Absolutely. I think the person's energy has a ton to do with it. And then again, circling back, if you don't have, like, the good basics to, like, dial things back, it can make things a little bit more challenging.
I've had to do things differently with my border collie than my mixed breed. I would encourage my mixed breed to watch and get excited. Mm-hmm. But if I allowed my border collie to watch and get excited, It would be a disaster. She's so high drive and very reinforced by motion. We would go into the ring and she would be doing the course by herself sometimes if I allowed too much stimulation before. Yeah. So we came up with our own ritual going into the ring. Mm-hmm. I generally used a gentle leader bringing her in just to make her a little bit more calm-minded.
Makes a massive difference.
And I would do more rewarding before on my warm-up with food than toy. The toy just brought her to a different level. As our training progressed, I was able to advance a little bit more and switch things up. But at the beginning, I wanted her to be successful, and I also wanted her to be more mindful. Mm-hmm. So I would opt to use food and a gentle leader. And then when she came out of the ring, and obviously, hopefully things went well, then she would get the toy reward.
Yeah, absolutely. We give them a toy even if it doesn't go well, just so you
yes.
know.
Yes, yes.
yeah, those are such great words of advice. You know, food versus toy, I think, makes a big difference for dogs. A lot of dogs are a little more calm-minded with the food. I think that's a great suggestion. In the last episode, we were talking about the dog that you have on the start line is the dog that you typically get on the course. And that sometimes stems to like outside the ring as well. So if you have a high drive dog and they go into the ring and they're not in the mental state that like, you know, is going to benefit you, chances are when you release them, like things aren't going to go well. So, you know, agility in competing anyways, and actually this could fall into class too, but it starts like in like X amount of time prior to you even walking through the gates. Like what happens before you go in the ring really changes what happens in the ring. And I know this is something that you and I talk a lot about, especially Jam and I, we have this thing where we get like dogs at the same time or similar times, and they're always like the same dog. So like we got our mutts at the same time. I just called them mutts. That's really weird.
Yeah.
And then we got border collies at the same time. And because they were brother and sister, we went through a lot of the same problems. And I remember we had like this whole routine down for like Funky and Wink, our mixed breeds. And it was like a very specific routine. And we talked about it last episode. But then when we got our border collies, it was like, okay, we'll throw that routine out the window because
it does not work
for these dogs because they're totally different dogs. And the first couple trials, we would go back to our tent or back to our trailer.
Our bitter barn.
We have to talk about the bitter barn sometime. And we would say, okay, like what went well and what didn't go well? And like, what about what we did before we went in made a difference? And we slowly started to narrow down. Remember?
Yep.
We
used to say
like, yeah, how early should you take the dog out? Like I know for Rad and actually for B, I would do, like, I would try not to do the warm-up jump, like, too close to when I went in the ring because she's just too excited. So I would get up, I would warm her up, like, away from the ring where she can, you know, have a brain. Then I would go do the warm-up jump. And then for, like, 5-6 dogs or maybe even sometimes more, I would find some spot around the ring where she couldn't see in the ring. And I'd just sit and I reward her for
Being calm.
She's got her gentle leader on. I'm feeding her for just sitting calmly and just sort of getting her like in that zone. I'm not like tugging and like doing all these things because it just brought her up a bit. I can kind of do that a bit more now, I would say.
Yeah, but these things evolve over time. Yeah. It's not initial and it's a bit of trial and error. Mm-hmm. The biggest thing for me was between switching between my breeds was changing the style on how I ran my dog.
Yeah.
With my mixed dog, I tended to run a little bit, I don't want to say out of control, but I was
aggressive.
Yeah.
Like, be aggressive.
Yeah. Like I would say every obstacle 3 times and I would
walk. Go.
But if I did that with my border collie, she would have already done 3 tunnels.
Oh my God. My dogs would be like in the next galaxy. Their brains would be so blown.
So one of the biggest learning curves for me was absolutely on how I ran the dog. I needed to be much calmer in the way that I ran the dog.
Yeah.
And she was able to be more successful from that and think a little bit.
Yeah. I learned that years ago. I had a border collie back long time ago. She was the first dog that I ever ran that would scream when I would run her. Slice.
Oh, Slice.
But we
so different though. By the time you guys progressed.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. So she was born in like 2002. So this was like
you would have thought that she was a slug ago. When she went on the start line.
Yes. Oh, she was hysterical. She would sit super calm in like this tight little vulture sit, and she would stare forward, and she wouldn't move a muscle. And then as soon as you would release her, she would just start screaming, and I couldn't think. I also wasn't nearly the handler that I am now, so she also was probably like, get out of my way, you're late, and all of these things. I'm sure she was like irritated with my handling, but then as that started to get better, and then I started to work on teaching her that like screaming like that was not going to allow the course to continue, she started to figure out, okay, I just need to like calm a little bit, and then I get to play more agility. And oh my gosh, it was just so much better when she's just sort of like toned it down a little bit. And then as she had puppies, I would always warn everybody when they would get a puppy.
I have one of those puppies.
Do not let it scream. You'll regret it. Yeah, she taught me so much. So every border collie I got after that, I just was able to make adjustments. I never had any issues with her outside of the ring though. That dog could watch agility. She would lie there almost with her head on the ground. Like she was like that good old, even tempered, like chill border collie until boom, it's time to work. And then she'd be 110%. That did not carry down to her son, Slam, Grand Slam, who I also have. He would scream outside the ring. Oh, he was a squealer. But he was way more level-headed on course.
Yes.
So, but then it just... Every dog is different, and I think that's what's so important. So hopefully today...
You have to kind of figure out what makes that dog stimulated or more excited.
Yeah. Yeah, we're going to give you a whole bunch of different tips today, and you know, hopefully a couple of them will work for you and your dog. But I think that's what's important. You can't just like, you know, try one thing and be like, oh, that's not going to work. Like every dog is a little bit different.
It's a bit of trial and error, yeah. Figuring out what makes
them. And it takes time. Like that's why this is going to maybe sound a little bit lame, but I think it's really helpful. Make some notes. Like, you know, write things down, like what did you do this trial, and then look at the results, or like how did it go, you know, and then make little adjustments. Like don't do like a whole bunch of things different at a time, like start to see what works.
Or also videotape your training sessions.
Yes.
And see what maybe excites the dog a little bit more. I had to put my border collie on a little bit of a tunnel boot camp because she really liked tunnels, and it was very challenging and it was frustrating. She would self-reward and go in a tunnel. So I ended up making sure that that didn't happen. I didn't allow that to happen.
Yep.
And if she did self-reward after she came out of the tunnel, I would make her think and make her lie down and have a moment to kind of get her head again.
Yeah. And not in a disciplinary way, no. Just in like a,
take a breath.
Yeah. Like, how about you don't things individually? Yeah. The other thing you just reminded me about when you said videotaping, and this is something that my dad taught me when I was younger. So for those of you who don't know, both of my parents are professional dog trainers. And as a kid, they both did agility and drug me around everywhere with them. And they were my coaches at one time. And I used to get so irritated when my dad would do this, but he would always videotape my runs when I would trial. And he would always videotape like 5 minutes before I would go into the ring, my like 40-second run, and then like 5 minutes after the ring. So then I would go to watch my run and I'd have to scrub through all of it. And I'd be like, Dad, like, this is so annoying. I just want to see my run. And you know, Kale, there's a lot to learn about what happens before you go in the ring and when you come out of the ring in terms of like your attitude and, you know, your dog's attitude and things like that. Like you need to watch what you look like with the dog when you come out or when you go in, because how like you're going to affect
the dog. That transfers
over. Yeah. And it took me a while to kind of like
appreciate it.
Yeah. But he's so right. Like, that actually will teach you a lot. Like maybe you're so focused on like looking in the ring and like trying to memorize what your course is or like get your gamble plan in that you don't need. Like how many times do we see people standing and looking in the ring and they have their dog on a tight leash and the dog's just bark, 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 bark.
Or going back and forth.
Yeah.
Or...
And like they don't even do anything about it. And I like twitch inside because like I can't stand when dogs do that. Everyone's to each his own. Of course you can do whatever works for you. But I know that if I was to let my dog do that, she would be in such a frenzy by the time I walked into the ring that I just wouldn't get the type of partnership that I would really be hoping for. So really think about like the before and after, because I think you'll learn a lot from that. you just touched base on this, but I think we should talk about it more, and the whole self-rewarding thing. Mm-hmm. You just said about like tunnels and stuff.
Or spinning or barking. Or
yes, it doesn't have to be
releasing.
An obstacle. It uh-huh. could be a behavior that your dog does that's self-rewarding that you could use to your advantage. Spinning, barking. Jumping on you, taking obstacles without being asked, those types of things. And if you have a dog that goes off course a lot or is like a what we call obstacle grabber, very obstacle focused, then those are the types of dogs that I would put more more restrictions on in class, in trialing or whatever. I wouldn't allow them just to go and take something without being given the command first. Tunnels are a big one for us because we always have dogs that tend to love tunnels a lot.
And looking how you're rewarding too, having the dog come back to you for the reward rather than, you know, take an obstacle, throw a toy, and them being able to play a little bit more independently, ensuring that that mm-hmm. reward is coming back to you and that you're part of the party mm-hmm. and that they're not doing that individually.
Yeah. I am constantly on top of B for starting a sequence before I ask her to. And I don't do it in a really harsh way or anything like that, but like there's lots of times where, and she's so friggin' smart, so I'll do something and then she lines herself up right in front of that obstacle again. And like, she's looking at me, looking at the obstacle, looking at me, like she's all twitchy. And sometimes if she's super close to the obstacle, instead of saying like, okay, I'll just say like down or tap.
Change it up.
Yeah. And she has to pull her way away from that tunnel and come back and tap my hand. I literally did it last night for, I was filming some stuff for my online class and I was repeating a couple things and she like went to go into the tunnel and she stopped herself, which was great. And good she was girl. Like about a couple inches from the tunnel and I was like, good girl. But instead of saying tunnel, I was like, okay, tap. And as soon as I said that, she stopped and she was just like, oh my God, I have to pull myself away from the tunnel. And then when she came back and she touched my hands, I said yes. And I threw the toy, but I threw it in the opposite direction of the tunnel. And I did that 2 or 3 times. And then the third time I asked for it, she ran away from the tunnel, immediately tapped my hand to tug. So I was changing her impulse. And I just do that all of the time with her because it's just a great reminder. I love that she's keen and I want her to be keen, but I also want her to be attentive and focused and mindful. And, one of my proudest things that I can train my dogs to do is they can be running full tilt on course. And if I say stop or wait, they will literally come to a complete stop. And it saved
you so many times.
In so many trials. It is at world championships. Yes. It's literally saved.
I think you did that with Slam.
I did it. Uh-huh. Yeah. He was going to go into a tunnel and a weave tunnel discrimination. And I was like, wait. And he stopped dead and looked at me. And I was like, weave. And he went in and the crowd went wild. And it was like an awesome moment. But I was like, see, that damn obedience training. It just makes such a difference. Yeah. But that impulse control, I think, is really helpful. You had mentioned this earlier when we were talking about it. You also need to make sure that, like, you know what behaviors that you ask for your dog, whether it's going to calm
or bring them high.
Yeah. Want to talk
yeah
about that?
If I did a hand tap with my puppy, that would make him higher.
Yeah.
Where Kale can do that with her border collie and she's a bit more focused. And I can do that with my other border collie and she's fine as well. But for whatever reason, my puppy finds that
very stimulating
and exciting. So I have to do other things with him. So maybe I would do like shadow handling, a circle.
Have him follow you, more handler focused.
Yes, become more handler focused rather than letting him hand tap where he does that kind of obsessively.
Yeah. I think knowing that is really important. And then also too, like using agility as using an obstacle as a reward. So sometimes like for me, if I do use a hand tap, I'll say like, ready, down, yes, tunnel. And so her reward is not the toy. It's the fact that she gets to go forward.
But after listening to a behavior.
Yeah. So you can use it to your advantage. Just mm-hmm. to, again, keep them mindful because, and again, we're talking specifically about really high drivey dogs that do a lot of self-rewarding and that are a little bit rammy. These points and suggestions that we're making today are not appropriate for like those dogs that like need a little bit more
pick me up. But I also find like with my puppy, he's he can be very stalky. So what I've mm-hmm. found as being helpful is having a look at me command.
Yes.
So he naturally, if I have a toy pre-placed or if he's thinking about moving forward, he naturally wants to look forward. But I don't always want him to look forward.
Especially if he's trying to lock on to something
yes,
that he's not supposed to take.
Yes, I want him to be a little bit more thinking about me. So I will ask him to look at me. And then once he looks at me, then I will allow him to yep. take the obstacle or the toy that he's so desires.
I love that. I've used that tactic a lot on like throttles or throttle wraps. So if B comes in and she's locked onto the wrong side of the jump and then I go to fix her mm-hmm. and she's sometimes because anticipation and agility can be really helpful. But it also can be very hurtful if you have a dog that is really high. You don't really want them to anticipate everything because you want them to wait for you to give them the command. And this is something that I'm on my dog a lot for. Sometimes I'll do something and she's just so sure that she knows what it is that she'll get locked on, but she's locked on to the wrong side of the jump. And same thing you said, she'll just stare at the jump and her eyes glaze over and like her mouth is quivering and she's just like, come on, mom, say the word, say the word, say the word. But when I see her like that, I'll just say, B, look at me. And I say it just like that, calm. And sometimes I have to say, B, look at me. And then she slowly turns her head to look and then I'm like, zip, zip, zip. And then she'll do it properly. But if I don't take her off of her lock, then it's like, I could say whatever and she would just go with yeah. what she's focused on. And again, I don't see that as like, oh, my command's not trained well enough. I see that as that I need to adapt to my dog's mind in that moment and help her to be successful. We do a lot of training with our dogs about we teach them a focus forward command and we teach them a look at us command. And we will use one or the other more depending on the type of dog. Like there's some
I'm working
dogs,
to look at me a little bit more these days.
Yes, you will be. But then there's lots of people who come to us and we right away say, you know, we're noticing that your dog has a bit too much handler focus. So, you know.
Reward off your body.
Yeah. Teach a focus or mark command. It makes such a big difference. The other thing that, and this is probably a pet peeve of mine, but I feel it makes a difference, is when you have dogs that are a little bit rammy. So to speak,
you did air quotes.
I just did air quotes and then I remembered that you guys can't see me. Eventually you will be able to see us. Hopefully we'll do this with video one day, but one thing at a time.
Yeah.
Setting up the podcast equipment and then we'll get there. Anyways, there's things like teaching your dog to be respectful of your body line. And again, these are all things that we do with our dogs right from our foundational program. We teach them about respecting our body line. And if for those of you have no idea what I'm talking about, basically if you imagine like your body, like being like an X, so you have like a plane extending from the sides of your body, plane extending from the front of your body and the back, your dog shouldn't really cross in front or behind you. We call that the ass pass. No, ass passing or cutting you off unless you give them a cue or you do a handling maneuver. And so I don't know how we see this a lot in when we're teaching, but a lot of dogs, when they're really excited, they'll like
push forward and cut you off.
Yeah. And number one, that's super dangerous when you're running full tilt and your dog is running full tilt, but it's also just rammy
mm-hmm. because you might see that in everyday life.
Yes.
Going through a door, a threshold of a door, or, mm-hmm. you know, maybe they're coming out of their crate in their car because they're excited to work and they're, you know, pushing forward and just like blasting
yep.
past. Those things transfer over to training and agility as well.
I really think that like we're sounding like drill sergeants right now. Don't let them do this. Don't let them do that. But I think what you need to also remember is like we balance it out. If you were to ever listen to Jamie and I train our dogs, you could stand on the other side of the parking lot and we have a big parking lot and you would be able to hear us.
It's
because
embarrassing a little.
I know we're squeaky and squawky and like we get so excited. So, but I just think it's important to be mm-hmm. balanced. We're super strict with the dogs about those types of things because we know what a
and
difference
certain
it makes.
Dogs more so than others.
Absolutely.
And that's where it goes back to. You really have to know what you have to be able to manage it. I would never do these things with my border staffy.
No.
But my border collies, they just have a different kind of drive.
They can handle a little bit more strictness.
Yes. And the stimulation just overrides everything. It's so self-rewarding.
Absolutely. Repetitions. What happens when the dogs are wrong? We talked about this last week with, and I want to say low drive dogs, but It can be low dry dogs.
Dogs that need a little bit more encouragement.
Build up. Yeah. You know, I mentioned last week when we were talking about low drive dogs, I had a dog that, you know, she was wrong too many times. She would shut down. Her reaction was to, you know, go slower. Or to get a little bit more unsure. When you have a high drive dog, sometimes the opposite happens. Sometimes
they go
when
faster,
they're wrong.
They're like,
what about this? What about this? What about this? And you're like, whoa, like you're up
slow
here.
Slow it down, lady.
We need you down here. Yeah. So repetitions is really something to consider in terms of...
And maybe certain obstacles, if you do too many repetitions, you might get more highness. Like I know if I did multiple tunnels in a row with my one border collie, that would put her through the roof and she mm-hmm. would be less thoughtful. Mm-hmm. But if, you know, I did something else, it wouldn't affect her so much.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, lots of times where we have to be like, okay, take a beat. Just, whoa, take a second. I mean, how often do I say that to be in our Wednesday night class?
A few times. Yep. Yep.
Yep. B, whoa. Just take a bit.
No,
take
ma'am.
Yeah. No. Yeah. But it makes a big difference. And I know sometimes if you just stop them for a second and just let them stand and just be set, just let their mind settle for
a
second.
It's not just the dog, though. It's for the handler, too. Because yes. I know that if my dog has self-rewarded and done three tunnels in a row, that is over the top. And that drives me bonkers. And yep. she's bonkers and now I'm bonkers. And yep. how are we going to get through this together?
One of you has to calm uh-huh. the you know yeah. what down.
So I'm like, whoa.
And it's not going to be the dog that
slow
dictates that.
Down. I can laugh about it after, but in the moment I'm like, oh my God, what just happened?
Yeah, I think that's really important. I also think that sometimes dogs can get frustrated too if they do something wrong too many times and if they stress high. And we see this in our weave pull training a lot, where the dogs just like they get so in their head that they can't really think anymore. You know, I actually think that this. Now that I'm thinking about it, I think this would be a really excellent podcast to talk about. James is like. Problem solving when you're training and how we make decisions on like breaking things down. And sometimes that decision is made based on the mind state of the dog.
Yeah, absolutely.
And you know, the way that we do a lot of training in our schooling and the way that we do our coaching is we don't like a person or a dog to repeat something wrong too many times because we know that usually leads with
frustration.
Yep. Confusion, stress, either dog gets too high or they get overworked and then now you can't end on like a good note. So I think the repetition is really important and being able to like break it down right then and there and show the dog what you need. And then I find that also helps with mindfulness now as well because it gets the dog on the right track again, which I think is really important. The other thing that I think that I have learned over the years with high drive dogs, because I've had a few of them now, and I've had the luxury of having border collies that are all basically the same. So I had Slice, and I bred her. I kept her son, Grand Slam, and then we bred that that lineage, and then I got Rad. You got Grin, and then we bred that lineage, and then I got Beeline. So they're all. They're all the same.
Similar.
Mm-hmm. And I learned, I made this change with Slam, what I learned from Slice. So Slice is the dog I mentioned. She used to scream around the course and she was really high. I learned that that's not how I wanted her to learn to do things. So with Slam, I did things very different. I focused a lot on mindfulness because I knew that I was not going to have a slow dog. I knew that he was going to be fast and he was going to be drivey, but it doesn't do me any good to have a dog that rips around the course but can't do tight turns, that can't collect when I ask him to. That
can't stay on course.
Nope.
Knocks bars.
Hold his contacts when I ask him
to. Can't hold the start line.
Yep. So I really was focused on control first and then I would slowly take the lid off from there. I did the same thing with Rad and I did the same thing with B. And there were times with both my young dogs, especially B, is I would post on Instagram of like my running dog walk and like she's so fast and she's so great. And then I would go to a local trial and I would stop her on the dog walk and I would, you know, hold her on her contacts, or I would, you know, make her sit on the start line for a long time, or I would make her stop dead in front of a jump and make her hand tap and then get a I would get eliminated for that. And people would be like, why are you like, why aren't you just running her? And I constantly had to say, she is not ready. She's not ready. If I was to release the beast within that first year of training or of trialing, it would have been not the right thing for her because she already wanted to be high. So again, we said this last time too, I don't care about getting a cue. I care about the long-term.
How it's going to transfer over down the road.
I want her to be great for many, 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 many years. And I, those are the things that I need to change. And I knew that if I had to let her start running the dog walk, she didn't know it well enough while she was high-minded.
Your ratio of success might not be as what you want it to be.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, and then you slowly take the lid off. And, you know, there was a time there where she wasn't getting as fast as times and things like that. And I just didn't care because I knew eventually
it would get there.
Yeah.
These types of dogs, you have to be a little bit more patient.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I think, we've said this before, but I think it's knowing the dog that you have and then being able to make those adjustments. I mean, you said to me today that you still don't know what kind of dog you have Smooch. You don't know whether he's a let him have his head or like put a lid on him in some situations. I mean, he is showing us that he's quite high-minded in like the stimulation of like people moving, but that doesn't necessarily mean it's going to be the same when he's running himself, right? Like it's all relative. But I think that the most important thing to remember is that you need to just adapt to things that you see in the moment and not let anything go too long before addressing it.
Mm-hmm.
And that makes the best dog trainers, the best agility handlers in the world, they see a glimmer of a problem. Boom, we're on it.
Yeah.
It's like, yeah, but that comes with experience.
Yeah. Well,
too,
I saw Smooch squealing in the arena, and initially I thought it was kind of funny. I was like, oh my God, this is out of control. And then it happened again, and it wasn't so funny for me.
At least we can laugh about it now.
Yeah, I can laugh about it now. But it was, in the moment, it was very frustrating because he was not all about me. And he usually is about me. Yeah. But in this situation, he was all about the other dogs and the handlers. He was very excited.
Yeah.
So, you know, learning curve.
Yeah. And I think that's when you start to recognize that, you're like, okay, there's something here. What do we need to do now? Like, what's the...
You have to deal with it so it doesn't hold you back. Like, you want to continue to move forward. And if agility is your focus, you need to address the other things before you can go on and have a great time.
Yeah.
You know, doing the thing you love.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that if you were to say, would you rather have a dog that you have to, like, build up? Or would you rather have a dog that you have to, like... calm down, I would choose the latter. I would choose the second after doing both.
Mm-hmm.
Just because it sort of suits my personality and my training a little bit more.
I enjoy training, and I had to be a bit more mindful with the other type of dog temperament that I had where I couldn't do too much, where my dogs, my border collie generally likes to work.
Yeah.
But I just have to be mindful of what I'm doing while I'm working.
Yeah. And I think any way you cut it, there's problems with both.
There's challenges, but that's what's about training the dogs is that no dog is the same. They each bring different challenges.
Yeah.
And you kind of have to go with it.
Yeah. And I think that there's so much that you can learn from previous dogs that you can carry over, but then you also have to be prepared
to switch it up.
Yep. Because you might have to do things differently. And just because it worked with the last dog doesn't necessarily mean it's going to work with this dog and being able to move with that. I also think too, if you're an inexperienced agility handler or trainer, and you do have a high drive dog, I would definitely suggest that you try to hook up with somebody that has experience in this, because I think it can, because it's such a self-rewarding problem. I'm air quoting again, because it's not a horrible problem, but like if you let that go on for too long, it's so much harder to fix. So if you can like get on it early, it really does make the biggest difference. I know we have people specifically come to us that say, I hear you're good at teaching collection. So help me. And it's fun, but it takes a while, and it's not a quick fix sometimes.
You have to be patient.
There's all kinds of training tools and techniques and obedience skills and training things that can make such a difference.
Well,
That was a good one.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. So hopefully you guys found this helpful. We have a great list of topics coming up. If there's anything that that you guys would like to hear us speak about too, we would be all ears because we
like talking.
We do. We like talking. We keep saying we're going to add wine, but it's currently a Friday afternoon and we weren't sure if that was appropriate, but
maybe we'll have to do an evening one to make it appropriate.
Maybe so. Anyways, thank you so much for listening, everybody. Hopefully you found this helpful. And whether you're hanging out or driving in your car or whatever it might be, hopefully you're feeling inspired to go and do some training with your dog, because that is the point of this podcast. We want to get you guys excited about training.
Solution focused.
That's right. Think out of the box a little bit. And hopefully we can bring to you guys some, you know, tactics that we have learned through our own experiences and in our teaching from the last little bit. But yeah, that was fun. Thanks for listening, guys.
Thanks for listening to our McCann Dogs Agility Podcast. If you'd like to learn more about us, check out the links in the show notes below. On that note, happy training.